Thank you, Lynn. And that was a beautiful prayer circle. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Guiding Light. Yeah, as Lynn said, next Wednesday and the following Wednesday, I will not be here because I am leaving for Ireland in the morning. So it looks like the next time I'll be back is the 28th, September 28th. So I'm going to blink, I think, and September is going to be gone. It's going to happen very, very quickly. Hey, dances. I saw you in the room last night. It was nice to see you back. Yeah, I've been packing. Lynn knows I've been packing the last hour because I have meetings after this ends. I have meetings almost one after another, all the way until 8 o'clock at night, my time. And I need to get up around 4 in the morning and go to the airport. So this last hour was the only hour I had to pack. So I was packing. Almost done. Have a few things still in the dryer. But when those things come out of the dryer and I throw them into the suitcase, pack up this computer I'm talking into, and I'll be done. So, getting all ready to go to Ireland. While I'm in Ireland, I'll be doing two retreats. One up in the Belfast area, up in Northern Ireland. And one in the in Southern Ireland, in a little town, maybe Weatherford. I don't remember the name of the town. So it's good to sit down and be kind of slow for a moment. This is one of those days when I'm running around getting as many things done as I can with the minutes that I have before leaving. Last week when we were here for the Guiding Light, we were finishing looking at some prayers that Jesus prayed in the upper room with the disciples before starting the trek across the valley to the Garden of Gethsemane. And one of the things that was really exciting last week, at least for me, was listening to Jesus pray about what I'm going to call the spreading of one light within one mind. Sometimes we can call that awakening for all. But one thing that's interesting about the book of John is it, even though it shows Jesus walking across the Kidron Valley to the Garden of Gethsemane, the next thing it shows in the Garden of Gethsemane is the arrest. It doesn't show what the other books of the New Testament show, which is what happened when Jesus went to pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. So what I decided to do this week is to leave the book of John for a week, go back to the book of Mark, and read about what is said to have happened in the Garden of Gethsemane prior to the arrest. And then we'll go back to the book of John. So I am in Mark chapter 14, and I'm going to start with verse 32. But before we go to the Garden of Gethsemane, let's go to Michael Jackson. We're going to listen to Michael Jackson as he sings Man in the Mirror. Here we go.
Oh,
that song, you know, of course, Michael Jackson is talking about you have to make the change with the man in the mirror. And you know, he says, at one point he says, I've got to make that change today. He has a sense of urgency in the song. I've got to make that change today. And the reason I played that song is we're about to watch Jesus as he goes through that. I've got to make that change today. So, again, we are in the Bible, and today we are jumping over to the book of Mark, chapter 14, starting with verse 32, because this part of the story is missing from the book of John. So I'm going to read first the story of Gethsemane to you, and then we will go back and look at it. It's actually a fairly short story, so maybe we'll get back to John today. We'll see what happens. But here's the story. They went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." He took Peter, James, and John along with him, and he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death," he said to them. "Stay here and keep watch." Going a little farther, he fell to the ground and prayed that if possible, the hour might pass from him. "Abba, Father," he said, "everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me. Yet, not what I will, but what you will." Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. "Simon," he said to Peter, "are you asleep? Could you not keep watch for 1 hour? Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the body is weak." Once more he went away and prayed the same thing. When he came back, he again found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. They did not know what to say to him. Returning the third time, he said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Enough. The hour has come. Look, the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise. Let us go. Here comes my betrayer." So that's the story of the Garden of Gethsemane as it is recorded in the book of John. As it is recorded in the book of Mark. Not John. Mark. It's not recorded in the book of John at all. First of all, I want to say that I have been to the Garden of Gethsemane 3 times. And when you're at the Garden of Gethsemane, you can roll back your imagination to Jesus' time. And you can see how far away you are from the walls of Jerusalem. You know, it's a fairly decent walk across the Kidron Valley. I've walked that. It's a fairly decent walk across the Kidron Valley. Plus, when you're in the Garden of Gethsemane, you're really on the bottom part of the Mount of Olives. So you're kind of raised up a little bit. So if there were soldiers or someone coming towards you from Jerusalem, coming to the Garden of Gethsemane to get you, you could actually see them crossing the Kidron Valley. You can watch them coming. The Garden of Gethsemane is an olive garden, and the olive trees are pretty short. So you can see. And you can see that if somebody's crossing, you know, if there's a bunch of soldiers coming to arrest you, you can see that. They probably had torches burning if it was dark or something like that. And beyond you, you know, there on the Mount of Olives at the Garden of Gethsemane, beyond you, at this point, there would have been just wilderness. So, yeah, Jesus could have run. Yeah, he could have hauled behind. He could have run. He did not have to stay. And we hear here in the story that he, you know, the majority of the disciples he left somewhere on the edge of the garden. He took Peter, James, and John a little further into the garden with him, but then at some point he left them too. And then he went in a little deeper and fell to his knees and prayed this prayer. So he was alone, which really means he could have run. And not only that, we know that now from the Bible that the disciples that were closest to him, Peter, James, and John, actually fell asleep. So, I mean, you know, just over and over and over again, we see signs that he could have run. He didn't have to go through what was coming next. And we also see that Jesus was panicked. In fact, another one of the Gospels, I'm not sure if it's Matthew or Luke, but another one of the Gospels talks about how he cried tears of blood. You know, so it's really explaining that he was very, very afraid. And we see here in the book of Mark that he asked his first prayer, the first thing that comes out. You know, we sometimes hear that the ego always speaks first, right? The first thing that comes out is, take this cup away from me. You know, save me from this, right? But then we see that he surrenders. And he says, yet, not what I will, but what you will. And he surrenders. But what's interesting is, after he surrenders, maybe thinking that it's done, he comes back out to where he left Peter, James, and John, and he finds them sleeping. And he gets upset at them. And as he notices himself, as he's observing himself, angry at them for falling asleep, it's as if he realizes he's mad at them because the part of him that wants the body saved, the part of him that's attached to the body, is still present. That has not gone away yet. Because, you know, he's realizing that he's angry at them because he wanted them to protect him long enough to surrender. But if he still has that idea in his mind that he needed them to protect him long enough, and now he's mad at them for falling asleep, he must not be as done as he thought he was. You know, and he says that the spirit is willing, but the body is weak. And he goes back into the garden again. And a second time, you know, he prays. We don't have the prayer recorded for us the second time. But the second time he goes in, he prays again. Is surrendering again, letting go of self-will. Being willing for awakening. And then he comes out again. And they're still sleeping. And he must have noticed something in him, still upset, still not pleased. Because he goes back in a third time. He goes back in a third time and prays again. And then what's interesting is this last time that he comes out, they're still sleeping, but this time he says, are you still sleeping and resting? And that "and resting" seems to signify that there's some kind of an acceptance in him of what they're doing. He is no longer upset. Now he is ready for what's about to come. People have all kinds of beliefs about Jesus, and I don't like to encourage any kind of belief. I like to look at the story as it is written and see what's here for us. And of course, one belief is that Jesus was born awake. One belief is that Jesus woke up in the desert during his 40 days and 40 nights. One belief is that he woke up here in the Garden of Gethsemane. Another belief is that he woke up on the cross. And I don't know, you know, anything about the life of Jesus, but the way that the story is told in the Bible, it does seem to indicate that maybe that awakening happened here in the Garden of Gethsemane. Because if you go back to the book of Luke, and you read the story of the 40 days and the 40 nights in the desert, although Jesus does pass three temptations, it says at the end of that that the devil withdrew until a more opportune time. And then as we're reading the story of Jesus, as we draw close to this point in the story, we start noticing Jesus is getting upset again. Even though he's a master, something is beginning to gnaw at him. The day after he enters Jerusalem, on the donkey, he gets upset. That's the day that he curses the fig tree for not having figs, even though it wasn't the season for figs, and the fig tree dies. It's also the day he goes into the temple and turns over the tables, even though he's been to the temple many times before and that business was always happening there. So something seems to be gnawing at him. He seems upset. And then we see him in the Garden of Gethsemane go in three times. And then after Jesus comes out of the Garden of Gethsemane, there's a definite difference in him, which we will see as we continue to look at the story. There's a definite change, even in Jesus, the Master. And the definite change is that he doesn't seem to have any more attachment to the outside world at all. He is now willing for anything. He is completely defenseless, completely focused on truth. So it's very, very possible that that awakening happened right here in the Garden of Gethsemane during his three times into the garden to pray. What I would like to do right now I have two things I'd like to do, but I think the one I'm going to do first is I'm going to play an audio for you. This is an audio that I've played before during my Seven Steps teaching, so you may have heard it before, but it's always fun to listen to it again. This is the story of Dr. David Hawkins talking about his journey through what he calls the final doorway, which again may be very similar to the experience of what Jesus was going through in the Garden of Gethsemane. So this is Dr. David Hawkins. It's on YouTube. We might have a commercial first. We'll find out. I'll turn the volume down to make sure it's him. Yeah, it looks like it's going to go directly to him.
I would have to recall having surrendered everything. There was nothing left. I was in a very high space, extremely rarefied space, in which there was no one, and very few beings had passed through this space. It's when you let go of all the ego, see? And in this infinite space of almost nothingness, there had been a couple of beings pass through this pass. It's like a high pass. I saw who had been there. They leave a track, a permanent track. You know? I saw Jesus Christ had been there. I saw the agony in the Garden of Gethsemane was the letting go of the agony of one's own existence, surrendering it to God, you see? And there was nothing left to surrender. And then came the knowingness, yes, accept your life. And then I got, this too must be surrendered to thee, O Lord. And I realized that there's the inner belief inside the ego that it is the source of your existence. And I saw that this too had to be surrendered to God. As I surrendered the source of life itself, I surrendered life itself to God. You surrender everything but life itself. And as I surrendered life itself, came forth an agony of dying. severe and a true agony. The agony lasted in earthly time, perhaps a minute or a couple of minutes, but it was severe. And I just kept surrendering to it, and I kept surrendering it to it. And I saw that that which is called I would never again exist, because its source of life was now being extinguished and surrendered. So I let go, resisting the agony of it. The part of the agony was a deep terror, the terror of non-existence. And then came forth the saying from a guru somewhere in the distant past: all fear is illusion, surrender it to God. So I surrendered the fear of non-existence and losing life forever, becoming extinguished, in other words. I surrendered it out of faith to my teacher. That's the value of the energy field of the aura of the teacher. The true teacher is one who has experienced it absolutely through and through and speaks from the authority of having experienced it, not read about it, heard about it, learned about it, but done it. Therefore, the courage came forth. As I say, the fear and the terror was severe. And on the other side of the doorway of death, all of life opened up, all of existence opened up and shone forth as the glory of God, which is what shines forth in this room at this moment. What shines forth to me in this moment right now is the glory of God expressing itself as the phenomena that we are now collectively witnessing.
That's it. So it's interesting to hear him talk about the agony, the terror, and also he talks about the right mind or the Holy Spirit, the reminder that all fear is illusion, let it go, right? So we can imagine in this Garden of Gethsemane when Jesus, you know, had to go in and out a few times, that this is what he was experiencing. This is what he was going through. I want to read to you now from NTI Revelation chapter 6. NTI Revelation chapter 6 is, of course, an interpretation of Revelation, and here it's interpreting the opening of the six seals on a scroll that you'll find in Revelation. I want to read about the sixth seal. On page 470, at the very top of the page, the sixth seal represents the end of perception. The way you see shall be based on how you have chosen. You shall see illusion, which has stepped forward to be released, or you shall see fear made real, and you shall run from it. Whew, that's a very interesting paragraph, especially when we consider what Dr. David Hawkins just said, because he talks about this fear, this agony, this terror. It was extreme. You know, he's using all of these really descriptive words. And then he says that what came was a sentence from a guru that all fear is illusion. Let it go. All fear is illusion. Let it go. And obviously he made the decision to do that. And here NTI says, when you get to this point, the sixth seal, which is your opportunity to let go of perception completely, Michael Langford would call this the opportunity for Manonessa, you shall see one of two things in that moment. You shall see illusion, which has stepped forward to be released. Remember what Dr. David Hawkins' guru said in his mind, all fear is illusion. You shall see illusion which has stepped forward to be released, or you shall see fear made real and you shall run from it. And, you know, I have heard stories of people who say that they have had this experience. They feel like they've been at the final doorway or the eye of the needle, it's sometimes called. And they admit that they felt the fear made real and they ran from it. And then we have others like Dr. David Hawkins and Michael Langford and others who say they felt the fear, but somehow let it go and moved on through. So I perceive this as, you know, if we want that awakening, if we want that awakening, this is a very important point. Because any of us that have ever felt fear, we know how extreme fear can be. And this fear might be, of course I haven't experienced it yet myself, but based on how carefully Dr. David Hawkins was trying to describe it to us using words like extreme and terror, right? And the way we see Jesus going into the garden three times before he lets go, right? This fear may be worse than anything that we've experienced. It's the fear of ceasing to exist, Dr. David Hawkins called it. He said because the ego shows up at this point as, you know, it's a belief, but it shows up at this point as the source of existence. You know, like before, you know, we may have let go of other beliefs. Like if we go to my case, you know, I've let go of the belief in betrayal, let go of the belief in rejection, right? Let go of all these beliefs. Well, now the belief that is showing up to be let go of is that the I is the source of existence. Some of you have already started experiencing or maybe already experienced the challenge of letting go of the I am bad belief, what the Course calls guilt, what NTI calls unworthiness. And you know how deeply held it is to, how deeply held that belief is? Well, I, as the source of existence, is deeper. So, letting go of this belief is the most challenging experience we have to face. And this is the final doorway. So the reason I perceive this as helpful is because right here in what still appears to be everyday life, we have opportunities to let go of believing fear. I think that what we don't realize is that we trust fear. It sounds crazy, trusting fear, but the average person definitely trusts fear. When fear starts speaking about, you know, something that you need to avoid in order to be safe, most people listen. If fear says, make these phone calls, make these changes, get rid of this person, whatever fear says to do, boy, we do it because we trust fear. We think that fear is keeping us safe. And in fact, that's one of the primary teachings in The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer, that we think fear is keeping us safe. And in fact, Michael Singer talks about how if we listen to fear, how, you know, it's like we're building walls around ourselves and our world is getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller as we try and stay safe. And actually, we're walling ourselves inside of a prison of our own making. But because, and who knows how long we've believed that fear keeps us safe. You know, I don't know anything about previous lifetimes, but, you know, some teachers teach that there have been many, many, many previous lifetimes. So possibly for thousands of lifetimes, we have believed that fear is keeping us safe. So when we come to the point where we have a choice, even right here in what seems like everyday life, not necessarily just at the final doorway, when we come to the point where it feels like we have a choice to listen to fear or not believe fear, it can seem like a very difficult choice to not believe fear. And that's because of this belief that we have that fear keeps us safe. So by not listening to fear, when we've invested so much in believing that fear keeps us safe, to not listen to fear is like making ourselves unsafe. And that's scary. So it seems to me that in order to help us with this moment that could come at any time, we're told, you know, like a thief in the night, it can show up, this moment when we have the opportunity for true awakening, manonessa, beyond perception. In order to prepare ourselves, in order to make the same decision that Jesus made and that Dr. David Hawkins made, it seems like one thing that we can do now in our everyday life is begin to practice noticing when we are trusting fear. In fact, even making fear our God. It sounds extreme, but it's what we do. And start making different choices. Start choosing not to trust fear. And in my case, where I first got to start practicing this was after I had been guided to leave my job in Boston and move to North Carolina so that NTI could be written, you know, during those first 4 years or so, I was living off of my savings. And when I started this, my savings amounted to $50,000, which I think you guys know in today's world is not a lot of money. And so what was happening, even immediately, like I moved to North Carolina in July, and I remember August writing the checks for those very first bills, electricity and telephone and that kind of thing. I remember the panic because for the first time in my life, I wasn't earning money. For the first time in my life, I wasn't putting money in savings. I was now taking money out of savings, and I didn't know when I would work again. I didn't know how long the money would last, and there was this panic. But even though I panicked, I wrote the checks anyway, you know, and just paid the bills, right? Just paid the bills. It seems to me like it was after a year, but it might have been after 2 years, because you know how memory is. This fear really set in. And it was so funny because it not only set in with me, it set in with my friends on the Peace of God and in ACIM Gather. The people who were around at the time, who were my friends, who were on this spiritual path, they started to share my fear. And people started typing in the room when I was teaching things like, go get a job, Regina. And they weren't trying to be rude anyway. They were trying to be helpful. They were afraid for me. You know? And friends would call me on the phone and send me emails I remember one day, I thought, well, I will just open the paper and just look at the want ads. And I opened the paper and looked, and I lived in this little bitty town. I mean, you know, maybe 18,000 people. There aren't a lot of jobs, you know, usually truck drivers, waitresses, that kind of thing. How many friends sent me money? None at that time. Nobody was sending me money at that time. So I opened up the paper in this little bitty town where usually there aren't any jobs at all, and there's this job that is perfect for me. I mean, like, it was saying what it was, you know, this is for the director of, I think, the local Red Cross office, but when it described the prior experiences and the skills, it was perfect for me based on all of my prior experience. And in this little bitty town of 18,000, I bet you I didn't have a lot of competition either. There may have been nobody else in town as qualified for that job as me. It's distinctly possible. So I typed up my resume, typed up my cover letter, put everything in an envelope, was driving to the post office to mail it, and just as I was arriving at the post office, I heard as clear as day the thought, and there was no judgment in it. It was like absolutely my choice, whatever I wanted. It was just questioning what I wanted. The thought was, do you want to go back to your previous life, or do you want to continue with me? And I realized that was the choice. I mean, I could put this resume in the mail and probably have an interview pretty soon and probably have a job pretty soon, and I would be right back in my previous life feeling safe. Or I could continue with spirit, with inner guidance, and see where it would take me. And I knew what I wanted. And so instead of putting that envelope in the mailbox, I put it in the trash bin. And these are the kinds of choices that come up from time to time for us to make. And I feel these types of choices prepare us. Because now it's years later, right? I don't know how many years later. I mean, I don't know when this was, but let's say it's 10 years later. That's a good guess. 10 years later, and you all see that I'm fine. So even though the mind was telling me I was going to die, something terrible was going to happen, I had to go get a job, and all of my friends were echoing that fear, as you can see, it wasn't true. So if we pay attention when we choose not to listen to fear, we find out that fear is not a wise counsel. Until, you know, what we don't realize, again, is because we have trusted fear, possibly for thousands of lifetimes, we do think fear is a wise counsel. But if we start making those crazy decisions with inner guidance that go in the opposite direction of fear, right, we then learn that something else is taking care of us and that fear is not a wise counsel. And this prepares us to make the type of decision that Dr. David Hawkins is talking about here, where this terror came, I mean, extreme terror, he says. And then the remembrance that fear is illusion, and he was able to let it go. You see, in our quote, everyday lives, when these opportunities arise, we are practicing. We are literally practicing for that moment of decision when we have to go with what the ego is telling us is our death, that decision, right? We're letting go of the source of our existence. That's what the mind is telling us, which means we're choosing death. All right? We have to be able to let go of fear and choose that death. And so we're practicing for that as we learn, as we unlearn our trust in fear in our everyday lives now. As we unlearn our trust in fear, we are preparing ourselves to let go of fear at its most extreme moment when awakening is right there on the other side. I want to go back to Revelation. I'm going to read again the paragraph I just read, and then I want to read the next paragraph too. So here we go. The sixth seal represents the end of perception. The way you see shall be based on how you have chosen. You shall see illusion, which has stepped forward to be released. Or you shall see fear made real, and you shall run from it. Fear shall not be your victory. In making this choice, you shall know that you have chosen death. But even this is an illusion, as anything that is not love is not real. You experience the effects of fear because you have chosen the effects of fear. In seeing this and knowing the gratitude of the truth as true, you offer yourself the opportunity to step back and choose once again. So what this is saying is that whenever we choose fear, whether it's in that moment of the final doorway or whether it's in our everyday lives. Whenever we choose fear, we will know it because we keep fear. So if I had gone ahead and applied for that job and gotten that job, I would have temporarily felt safe because now I'm earning a living again, right? And money is coming in again. So I would have temporarily felt safe. There would have been a temporary relief from fear, but no more than a temporary relief. Something else, somehow, some way would have come up and there would be fear again. There would be worry again, right? So because I have chosen fear, I will continue to experience fear. And that's how I know I'm still trusting fear. That's how I know that fear is still my God. And it's saying if you're wise about this, even if you make the mistake of choosing fear, right, you can look at your mistakes with wisdom. So if you look at your mistake with wisdom and you say, ah, I see what I did. I chose fear. Fear promised to keep me safe. I did feel a temporary relief, but look, it's back again. You can become wiser, right? Which prepares you to make a different decision at the next opportunity. So you can learn from your mistakes. If you accept that the reason you're experiencing fear is because you chose fear, you're worshiping at the feet of fear. Fear is your God, so fear is what you're experiencing. And then you can wise up. And another thing this paragraph says is fear shall not be your victory. What that means is, I understood this as the scribe when receiving it. What this means is fear is never your last choice. Whenever you choose fear, you've just delayed the time that you won't choose fear. And in fact, we see Jesus demonstrating that as he goes in and out of the garden three times. You know, like he thought he was done, but he must have at some level chose fear because he goes back in. And he must have at some level chose fear because he comes out and he feels it again and he goes back in. And the third time he comes out, he doesn't feel it. So notice he wasn't done until he didn't choose fear. Choosing fear is never the end point. If you choose fear, you saw you chose fear, you can choose again. The only end point is choosing against fear or not choosing fear or letting fear go, however you want to word that. And then you never experience fear again, and that's how you know you made that choice. So if you're still experiencing fear, it means there's still a chance. And if you're not experiencing fear, well then, you know, that's great. You don't need another chance, right? And it kind of reminds me of the movie that many of you have seen, Revolver, right? Because in Revolver, his chance for choosing fear, this is Jake Green, who is claustrophobic, and his chance for choosing fear is in that elevator when the ego is telling him how small it is in here. He's stuck in the elevator, right, between the 12th and 14th floors. And the ego is telling him it's very, very small in here. It's very, very small in here. And he's always panicked before with small spaces. But now he chooses not to. He chooses not to believe fear. And the voice of fear, the ego, dies. And you see that when he comes out of the elevator, because when he comes out of the elevator, there's his enemy standing there with a gun ready to shoot him. Much more scary than an elevator, right? A gun pointing right at your head. And there's no fear. This is how he knows he did not choose fear, because he doesn't experience the effects of fear. So I think it's really good to know that, A, fear is an illusion and that we can let it go. It's really good to know that fear is not wise and we do not need to listen to it. But it's also really good to know that if we do listen to fear, that is not, you know, we didn't blow it forever. There's always another chance. The only possible last choice, the only possible final judgment is to choose trust instead of fear. That's the only final judgment. Fear can never be the final judgment. Isn't that great news? So let me read Revelation again. The sixth seal represents the end of perception. The way you see shall be based on how you have chosen. You shall see illusion, which has stepped forward to be released, or you shall see fear made real, and you shall run from it. Fear shall not be your victory. In making this choice, you shall know that you have chosen death. But even this is an illusion, as anything that is not love is not real. See, it's never the final choice. You experience the effects of fear because you have chosen the effects of fear. In seeing this, right, with wisdom, and knowing the gratitude of the truth is true, you offer yourself the opportunity to step back and choose once again. So what I'm going to do now, even though we've listened to this song before too, it seems very appropriate since we're looking at the Garden of Gethsemane story. We're going to listen to the Garden of Gethsemane from Jesus Christ Superstar. Let me find Jesus here. Let's see. I'm not sure if this is the right one or not. Yeah, here it is. Okay, so this is the song from the Garden of Gethsemane from Jesus Christ Superstar.
Take this cup away from me, for I don't want to taste its poison. Feel it burn me, I have changed. I'm not as sure as when we started. Then I was inspired. Now I'm sad and tired. Listen, surely I've exceeded expectations. Tried for 3 years, seems like 30. Could you ask as much from any other man?
I have to see my Lord, have to see, I have to see my Lord. No. I'm sad and tired. After all, I tried for 3 years. Seems like 90. Why then am I scared to finish? What I started, what you started, I didn't start it. God, thy will is hard, but you hold every card. I will drink your cup of poison, kneel to your cross and break me, bleed me, feed me, kill me.
Just like we heard from Michael Jackson when we were listening to Man in the Mirror, where, you know, Michael Jackson was talking about, I need to change today, that sense of urgency. That's what that take me now represents to me. It's that sense of urgency that no matter what, even if I die, I am throwing myself through this doorway, right? And that's how this ends. Take me now. And he dives through. So, you know, lots of things in that song, even though that, again, that's just a song by a couple of musical playwriters. But, you know, when you listen to the song very carefully, you hear lots of I in the beginning. So the self-will is really acting up. It says, I need to know why. I need to know. I. And then you can hear where Jesus begins to feel very, very alone. You know, like I've done everything I can. You know, I tried to please you. And I've heard others who say they have gone through this experience of the final doorway. That just before you step through the final doorway, you do feel completely alone. And that I think is also important to be aware of. It's important to be aware that we may feel in that moment totally abandoned by God, but that's an illusion too. This is the ego, right? This is the core of the ego rising up with all of its beliefs. And the ego feels completely alone. And so that belief that I'm completely alone, there's no one here to help me, that belief can rise up in those last moments. And so to be aware that we can feel so alone at that point, like we have to do this by ourselves, is also an illusion, just like the fear is an illusion. And then we hear a shift occur with Jesus, where he begins to remember truth. Just like Dr. David Hawkins talks about, he began to remember the guru saying all fear is an illusion. And what that says to me is that even though this experience of I'm completely alone arises, we aren't. And that right mind is right there, and it will shoot us the perfect thought that we need to grab a hold of to get us through, right? To get us through. And then Jesus remembers God, he surrenders self-will, and he says, take me now, and he throws himself through the final doorway. So, some teachers don't talk a lot about this final doorway, but if you listen carefully, you'll hear them talk about this fear that they had to pass through. And again, it could just be, I think Dr. David Hawkins says it was just a couple of minutes in earthly time. But I think it's okay. I mean, I think it's good for us to be aware that this final letting go of ego can be a very challenging time, and that we always be preparing for it, so that when our opportunity arises, we make the choices that we really want to make at the level of heart. that's it for me for the Guiding Light today. As I mentioned, I'm leaving in the morning to go to Ireland. So the next two Wednesdays in a row, I won't be here. But I will be back on September 28th, and we will return to the Book of John, and we will watch Jesus' arrest and what follows the arrest. Thanks, y'all, for hanging out with me, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks.